Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. We're recording this on, December 30th, 2018?
That's a good estimate.
Thereabouts. It means a few things just happened. That means that, we got to add to a list. An illustrious list. A curated list. It's like a wine list at this point. There are the big by-the-glass ones that everybody knows, but there's some vintage stuff back there, you know, way down in the basement that I don't know. Maybe you pulled off a shipwreck. It was supposed to go to Napoleon, right? It's just been sitting there since like 1848. Maybe it's something really, really super curated. Like, I don't know if I was just going to spoil where we're headed. Like the time Notre Dame lost to Tulsa. Yeah, man. Holly? This was the best question I thought we could lead off with, and you were the one who suggested it. What is it?
Well, Spencer, at some point last year, and I don't remember the reason why, I just started a thread of favorite Notre Dame losses, because it turns out that Notre Dame does unite the nation. It is America's team in that everyone in America has a favorite Notre Dame football loss. Some people are partial to the last time Notre Dame ran up into the playoffs. We all remember what happened there. Nick Saban buried them all screaming and patted the dirt with his little child-sized spade. Some people are partial to the 58-7 loss to Miami and Jerry Faust last game, where, as you pointed out, Jimmy Johnson ran up the score with his third string.
Which I believe I have heard Jimmy Johnson quoted as saying, "What was I supposed to do? My third string was good."
My personal favorite is 2007 Navy. That would be the Ram Vila game where they launched him like a cruise missile across the line of scrimmage at poor Evan Sharpley. And I forgot about this until Kit Wren reminded me last night. Lou Holtz went on TV after this game and said, "I think it's just graceful that Navy put so much energy into their football program. They should be studying ships." but last night, being bored in the second playoff game, we saw we decided to bring this thread back, and it's amazing how far you can go through this without finding a repeat.
Did anybody have Notre Dame Michigan 2011?
I feel like that was in there, but there were also a couple that I had never heard of. They lost I had forgotten about the Tulsa loss at home in 2010, which is up there with the second one that I learned about that was a new favorite, which is apparently a loss to Purdue at some point. I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that. The USF loss is also a great one.
Notre Dame in
they consider Purdue a rival, so it gets even more shameful.
It was October 1999, third and goal, and down by 5 points. Purdue sacked the quarterback to run out the clock, thanks to alert reader Ismail Mustafa for pointing that one out.
October 30th, 2010 is that Tulsa one, by the way. G.J. Kinney's finest hour. They converted on 3rd and 26. I probably should say this. It was a 28-27 win for the Golden Hurricane. If I can remind everybody, they weren't playing in Tulsa. Nope. Whole generation of Tulsa football players got to go onto the same grass that Rudy probably cut and sold on eBay just last week for extra cash. Yeah.
Another favorite one that I was not aware of, 1976, Georgia Tech beat them in the rain, running the wishbone and not throwing a single pass. Notre Dame had only one loss at that point to eventual national champs Pitt. Tech finished 4-6. This feels like the official Shutdown Fullcast Notre Dame loss.
Yeah, can we do an oral history of anyone who is still alive from this game?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or if you're still alive from the USF game, too, because...
I mean, how many USF students are still alive?
Exactly.
Is Brian Kelly still alive from that game?
Oh, thanks to Mike Billups, by the way, for putting that one in our eye line, because I don't think that one came up at the last thread.
I would say the biggest, by the way, the biggest like banger of these would be LSU Notre Dame, the Jamarcus Russell game. All I remember
gave us number one draft pick Jamarcus Russell.
Yes, mm-hmm. the one that gave us the moment where Troy Smith and Jamarcus Russell were on the sidelines of a game the next year being interviewed there at the same game. And Jamarcus Russell was wearing the biggest Coogie sweater I've ever seen in my life with a medallion over it, like this huge ghost face style medallion. And they asked Troy Smith, you know, I think it was Chris, what's his name? He's for Fox. He's perpetually clueless. And it goes like this.
That could be so many people.
It is. But he asked him, he goes, what do you think of this sweater and this medallion?
You're talking about the haircut who asked the Iowa player.
Exactly.
About America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That guy. He kind of barges into this interview. He asks these two, like, you know, fresh out of college NFL guys, like, hey, what do you think of this sweater and this medallion? And Troy Smith looks at it, looks at him and goes, I think it's very representative of Alabama.
Wow.
One of the best on-air answers I've ever seen.
The other thing about asking people for Notre Dame losses, it draws in, when I say it unites a nation, I don't just mean college football nation. It draws in people who clearly have no interest in the games themselves, by which I mean gamblers. I had one answer from reader Greg that was just this. You know, these people who come in and they speak as though the 2013 national championship game was news. Greg says the championship beatdown where they came in as number one, but were plus 10 in Vegas, Bama covered.
Cold.
It's like, also there was a football game.
That's like somebody going and going, man, male, mid-30s, also, great heart rate.
Apparently in 1926, Rockne blew off the game with Carnegie Tech to scout an upcoming opponent, and Carnegie Tech beat them 19-0.
Yeah, this was Notre Dame blew a title shot because Newt Rockne was too lazy. Didn't care enough about sports. Do we know Notre Dame's all-time win percentage against UConn?
1 second. Please vamp.
It's a whole bunch of aughts.
Is that 0-1?
0-1.
Oh,
2009.
Man, that's a Joe Biden grabs podium worthy win.
To the ultimate, the perfect UConn record, of course, 8-5. I'm not going to look it up. I'm assuming that's the best record in school history. What could be better?
I think it was Matt Brown was talking the other night. 2009 was such an underrated season in terms of insanity.
If only for that, yeah. Right? if only for that, and for, you know, like the longest, most miserable, like, doesn't that get to, let's see, 2009, and that's an Alabama year, because remember, for the last 10 years, you're like, is it an Alabama year or a not Alabama year? It's one of those.
It was one of the first Alabama years, though.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know what we were getting into.
Let's also not forget that Notre Dame is 0-2 all time against Oregon State.
Oregon State!
See, this is such a rich tapestry that I must have scrolled past 50 responses in this thread before you get to the first mention of the Bush push.
Where is the? What is this thread? Is this on Twitter or something?
Oh, yeah, this is last night. I just, it was like a quarter into the Bama-Oklahoma game. And I was kind of getting a little bit restless, and I said, "Is it too early to just start playing? What's your favorite Notre Dame loss again?" And apparently, according to the internet, it is not. It is not too early. Like Dolly at Christmas.
It is possible that Bama was playing the same game amongst themselves at the same time.
Yeah, it actually would explain a lot about what happened later.
In two games against Oregon State, Notre Dame's average scoring differential is a -24.5.
So room for improvement. So schedule them.
Let's see. The first one was 32. The second one was 17. At this rate, their next game against Oregon State, they'll lose by, what is that, 2?
Oregon State needs to, like, just come up with a traveling trophy for Notre Dame and just say, like, yeah, we've held it. Look at this. The silver beheaded orphan. Yep,
the
got
little
it right
wooden
here.
Irishman who we eat.
Also, I would like to give some love to the two Notre Dame fans I saw who were cruising through the thread, being like, "Yeah, actually, this is kind of fun."
This one's real good.
Those are true historians.
You have the correct opinions, sir.
So where are we putting 30-3 on this list?
Hey, that's a great question, Ryan.
Hi. So Alex Kirshner blogged, as he always does, constantly. He's never not blogging. He did a blog on Notre Dame's lost 8 straight big bowl games. This is sort of a big picture look at this. You know, the losses to UConn and Tulsa, those are awesome. We all love them. But at the big picture level, every time over the past 23 years that Notre Dame has gotten into an actual bowl game of any substance, they lose, usually really, really badly. And he has 30-3, second behind only the BCS title game.
But my resume was so good.
This is so good that 41-9 to fucking Oregon State is only fourth.
Notre Dame, we're cold Oklahoma.
As long as it can, this be a group project? Isn't football the ultimate group project?
Is there extra
credit? No, they're the ones who didn't sign up for the group project. That's their whole problem.
That's, if you'd only gone in with the ACC.
No, we'll do it ourselves.
Do it ourselves. Just so...
No, you'll drag down my score.
In the interest of some fairness, I would like to say, fuck everybody who is saying based on how Notre Dame played against Clemson, they shouldn't have been in the playoff in the first place. Because they are missing like the most obvious problem with that argument. And that is, and I think Roger Sherman maybe put it
as agitating to fire a coach. Who are you going to get?
It's not even that. It's imagine the counterfactual world where Notre Dame didn't make the playoff. Maybe it's because we're back in BCS land and only two teams made it, and those two teams were Alabama and Clemson. Maybe it's because we decided, you know, Georgia's getting that spot instead of Notre Dame because we think conference championship appearances matter. We'll get to that. Because
Kirk Herbstreit's in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really want to live in a world where Notre Dame gets to piss and moan for literally ever about the year where they went undefeated against a perfectly respectable schedule? A lot of the teams they played were not as good as they usually are. Stanford had a down year. USC had a down year, etc. Michigan had a Michigan year. Do you want to live in that world where they just like for years everybody just pissed and moaned about why can't we settle it on the field? I don't trust these computers. They're watching me piss. And now we have.
I don't have a Facebook account, so I wouldn't see any of that anyway.
Listen. All I'm saying is Spencer settled it on the field. Isn't it better
Spencer
this way?
Great point. Spencer makes a great point re-Facebook, but yeah, I got to agree with Ryan's overall argument here.
How in the world did we get to the point where seeing Notre Dame get its ass kicked in is a bad thing?
Yeah,
isn't that, when you clock in for a college football season, isn't this number one on your bucket list? I want to see Notre Dame humiliated in the biggest possible way. Well, guess what? That happened. Why aren't you happy?
This probably happened to the Roman Empire at some point.
Be happy too. You'll always be creepier about Jesus than Clemson. Take that trophy.
What is your favorite death in Die Hard? I think it's probably mine. And it's the lawyer, right?
It's the lawyer?
The cocaine snorting dude in the executive
world. Ellis?
Yeah.
Ellis?
How's this? Harry Ellis, I'm sure, has a law degree. Okay?
I mean, wasn't going to be my answer. My answer was going to be the cocky FBI agents in the helicopter.
Well, I mean, that's pretty good. Helicopter death is super big in the 1980s and 1990s, right?
And I feel like that more is Oklahoma in this example. Where they're like, don't worry, we got a helicopter and guns. We'll be fine. We can pull it out.
Helicopter death.
19. More helicopter death.
If you die in a helicopter, you've died well. I think that's a good life rule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Oklahoma, you died well.
You died well. You died.
They really did. They really did. Like, you're sitting there going, yeah, man. And Kyler Murray's just, he's not going to make it. But this is spectacular. Keep going.
Carl, I am realizing now that Carl, the, like, main sidekick villain.
The blonde one?
Kind of looks like Trevor Lawrence.
I was thinking he kind of looks like that Michigan State Rocky kid.
Which makes Reginald Vell Johnson Bama, I think, in this example.
But he's hell yes.
That makes sense because Reginald Vell Johnson's the backup.
What thread connects them both? Little Debbie.
Yeah.
Wow.
Q-E-D. And you know what Bama is? Family.
That's Auburn.
That's Auburn.
Oh my God. Reginald Bell Johnson's an Auburn plant in this. He's going to undo it all. Yeah, that's that. My point being, I'm now accustomed to seeing Notre Dame in there. And I almost felt bad from last night until, wow. I don't know, one guy said, you know, what? Julian Love went out injured, right? Best cornerback. Notre Dame's best cornerback went out injured. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, Julian Love went out, and then our secondary went to hell. I'm like, that's one guy. Yeah. Trevor, like, yeah. They're picking on him. I'm like, they're picking on everyone. Trevor Lawrence is putting the ball 40. They couldn't get to him. Did you see what Clemson's offensive line was doing? I know everyone is stunned by the butterscotch stallion himself, Trevor Lawrence, who really does look like Lawrenceville Lancelot, right? Like, he really does look like the most beautiful thing to ever walk into a QT parking lot. But Clemson's offensive line had him upright, clean, and grinning. He could have been back. Go
Spencer,
ahead.
Be fair, okay? Be fair to Notre Dame. It's not like Clemson was also without its best defender, right? Oh wait! I've just received a news bulletin.
Technically, that's not true because we're pretty sure it's like tied for first across like six different dudes.
So. That's true. They got four guys who'll tie for the number one draft pick, and they're without one. Okay, on a technicality, Notre Dame takes the grievance trophy here.
Yeah, this is like, oh man, we took that octopus's best tentacle. Yeah, he's still got seven arms, man. Good fucking luck. That's like they didn't compete.
That's not true. In the first half, they didn't compete. They did.
No.
They had.
Can we talk you down to first quarter?
Okay. For the first quarter and a half.
What are we going to sit here and give Oklahoma credit for competing for the last two and a half quarters?
Yeah, actually, okay, yes. Cool. Actually, yes.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Cool. Then Notre Dame competed for a quarter.
If you combine Notre Dame's first quarter with Oklahoma's last three quarters, we have a Notre Dame-Oklahoma championship game. Boom.
Guess what? That team would beat Virginia.
That team would score against Virginia. Unlike Not South Carolina.
Boy, I feel bad for the South Carolina fans who tuned into this episode and were like, well, they're not going to talk. Oh, God damn it.
Caught a stray.
Did any of y'all watch this game?
No.
No.
Spencer, I know
which one?
Did.
The Belk Bowl?
I myself did not watch this game, and I was kind of idly wondering before how far ahead or at pace with schedule are we before Bronco has this Virginia team playing between the whistles like his BYU teams played? And I was just interested in how many like covert neck punches Virginia managed to get in, because if there's one team where you would think that might be ill-advised to try it against, it's a Will Muschamp team, but apparently it suited him just fine. I really want to know about the neck punching.
I've only seen one team actually punch people in the taint on multiple occasions, and it was BYU's teams under Bronco Mendenhall. Not correction, like I'm clarification.
It was so much funnier when it was a team full of Mormons, but we'll take Virginians doing it, sure.
Oh, dear. Are you punching my dear Stedman in the taint?
My perineum.
I do declare.
You're going to knock the ancestry right out of him.
You've crossed the Mason-Dixon line, sir.
Yeah, no, that's the only team. They didn't punch in the nuts. Like, if they were in the scrum, they went straight for the... They went, you know, straight for...
Gooch holler.
For the nether region. Yeah, the knot.
Please, they went straight please, for sir. That's Virginia Tech terminology. We are in Charlottesville. Virginia Tech's pulled some great players out of Gooch Holler. I'm not disparaging.
Our crudo cousins in coal country would refer to that as between the pizzle and the bizzle, and we would not do that.
How many points did South Carolina score against UVA?
None.
Zero.
None. How many did they score against Georgia? 17. That's why Georgia's not in the playoff. Boom.
Damning.
Yes, if you want to know, like, we're giving Notre Dame the business here. But
send your arguments to @38Godfrey.
Mm-hmm, as always.
But they should have been in the playoff. 1,000%. Mm-hmm. It's insane to argue otherwise. It's stupid and counterproductive.
However,
Wait, Ryan, what's the philosophical term for this, that just because of the outcome doesn't mean that the that beforehand without this knowledge we were wrong? There's a term for this kind of argument, and I don't remember what it is.
Yeah, it's a legal term. Hold on.
Is this post hoc ergo propter hoc?
Post hoc ergo propter hoc. Yes. That after is what it is. Yes.
Yeah. Thing.
Yeah.
Nick Saban would say you're basing it on results, not process.
That's pretty much the same thing. So yeah.
Yeah, the process itself gave us this because, wow, it's crazy how many people make stupid arguments about this when not admitting we have a tiny sample size in a sport that will never have a big sample size. Ta-da!
I mean, the important thing is that the two-team playoff known as the BCS never gave us any blowouts. Always close, competitive games. Always both teams clearly deserving to be there and playing like it.
And here we are back talking about UConn again.
Well, speaking of significant, authoritative, definitive sample sizes, Notre Dame has an all-time losing record against NC State.
Oh, that's my second favorite Notre Dame loss.
Because they refuse to acknowledge the rain. It's
entirely on play calling.
Because Notre Dame doesn't respect weather. And yes,
the rain can't wash away character.
I've never felt closer to BK, because if I had been coaching Notre Dame in that game, I can't say that I wouldn't have done the same thing. Like, you're not the boss of me, God.
Jesus can walk on water. That means he can plant his passing feet.
Suck it, Poseidon.
Poseidon. Counterpoint. I'm just calling Notre Dame expensive NC State from here on out.
Oh, boy. I feel like that's mean to NC State. I don't think we should do that.
So naturally, this has also started the debate of, hey, we belong there, for instance, you know, Dwayne Haskins. God. Quarterback of Ohio State, like, oh yeah, hey, look at this, huh? Funny, huh? Yeah, yeah. Maybe you shouldn't have lost to Purdue. Also, by the way, maybe you guys shouldn't have had had a terrible human for a coach. Maybe that's honestly like what affected people voting. They were like, I don't know, you lose by 20 something to Purdue, and also that all happened.
Well, you definitely shouldn't do both of those. Like, Notre Dame.
I feel like that's a
metric also
that we probably should.
Well, I mean, like, choose one or the other. Because Notre Dame also has a terrible human for a coach, but he didn't lose to Purdue by multiple touchdowns.
Recently terrible. That's all people remember. Ding, ding, like, right. don't assume this isn't a flimsy, flimsy process that's malleable on the basis of snap human emotions. And to be honest, some not real bright people making decisions at the top.
Right. That's, go look up which coach won the Coach Leadership Award this year.
Integrity, respect, goodness, character.
Yeah.
If mayonnaise. You're listening to this podcast and are an Ohio State fan, first of all, thanks for sticking with us. Second of all,
Luke Zimmerman, how's it going?
Second of all, if you're planning on taking if you're a student at OSU and are listening to this podcast, and you're planning on taking Urban's leadership class, let us know.
Oh man,
yeah. I have
record. Please record that and send it to us.
Please patch us in on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have a series of several questions for you.
Live streaming, homie. Live streaming.
Be our Periscope hero.
Yeah. Also, the third thing that Ohio State student needs to hear, did you eat a gram of protein per desired body weight today? If you didn't, go get it, bro. Go get it.
That'll get you in the playoff for sure.
Mm-hmm. Gains won't happen without it.
The other chorus that was piping up a lot during the playoff, of course, was Georgia fans and players. Lots and lots of emojis from Georgia players, which that's fine. I think we sort of all agree Georgia probably is one of the four best teams, to use a popular term. I don't really know what the utility of that is. Maybe they can throw a parade for that, like UCF did. A banner says, you know, one of four best teams. Maybe that's what your banner says.
Final four. Call it final four.
If you want, yeah, do it. I just want to real quick. I'm looking at a document and I cannot tell based on part of the public discourse if this is a document that was sent to me from an alternate dimension or if this actually happened. I want
Don't
to
tell
sort
me
of
time
see
you
if
guy went to Georgia.
I'm just losing my mind here because I swear this actually happened, but October 13th, 2018. Can you confirm that's a date that happened in your timeline?
Yes, that is correct. That did
happen. Yeah, I remember it because it was the day I started my Joe Burrow dream diary collage.
Okay, Joe Burrow. That's good. That confirms that's a name that's in this document that I'm looking at.
Oh, interesting.
So the title of this this emission from, it's called the Associated Press. Are you familiar with this author?
Sounds like a shady cabal.
It seems legit.
Okay. They've titled this document LSU Downs Number 2 Georgia Gives Ed Orgeron Signature Win. So it sounds like Georgia lost.
So and Ed Orgeron the presence of Ed Orgeron's name indicates that this would be a football downing.
Yeah, I think that's a good context clue.
Not to say that.
Also, there are two. It's not an academic rankings, yeah.
I was going to say LSU had overtaken Georgia in something like juvenile diabetes, which of course they already have. But
no, that's a fierce battle. We're not ready to yield that just yet.
How are you going to be good at adult diabetes if you don't get them started early? Come on.
Raise them right.
It's a system.
There are two numbers here, and
it's called the Sugar Bowl for a reason, goddammit.
Yeah, there it is.
One is 36 and the other is 16. 36 is the higher number, right? Like, significantly?
In some timelines, yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit. Okay, this might be the
problem.
But
you know what? It could be like, it could be a blackjack thing.
You know who writes those textbooks down in Louisiana?
You know what it is? Oh, shit. I figured it out. Georgia fans think they're playing golf.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it.
Absolutely.
That's the entire problem. Why aren't we in the final foursome? We beat LSU at golf and we beat Bama at golf.
One too many 3-hour lunches from Daddy's dealership, and this is what you get.
Hey, would you all like to hear a hilarious true fact about Joe Burrow?
Boy, so would I.
He went to high school in Ohio. The name of his high school, Athens High School. The mascot, the Bulldogs. Absolutely true.
Wow.
100% true.
He's a plant.
Life's funny.
He's a plant.
It was foretold.
They didn't recruit him. Ah, the vengeance!
It was foretold!
What a turncoat.
Can't believe that. So nothing else happened. Actually, a couple of other things happened that I think really bear mention. Alabama won. Whatever. Also, Florida won a football game, and I was there.
What?
Which is fun. Yeah, I know. I was shocked. They beat Michigan. This is something, I was present for something that had never happened before.
Did you fight a child?
No.
Emotionally,
however,
yes.
I did gator chomp a child.
There we go.
Who was then telling me my team sucked. Did I point at the scoreboard? Yes. Did I say the word scoreboard out loud? No.
Also, is the scoreboard all around you in this building?
He did battle with this child in the astral realm. That's true.
Yeah. And a Michigan dude behind me, he started talking like this, real tough. Kind of sounded like a member of Les Miles' family.
Aww.
If a member of Les Miles' family looked like a 30-year-old, like Jim Jones. If they look like a member of my morning jacket, right? Like, I look back and I was like, sup, young raised on MGO block? How you doing? And he looked down and he was talking some shit. And without me really even thinking, like, I forgot that I could care. And I forgot that at times there's an inner redneck, right? If I'm just watching as a fan. Because without really thinking about it, I turned around and did the kung fu come here gesture. Like, why don't you come down and see about it? And I did it and immediately was like, oh, God. I didn't know how tall he was. I didn't know how bad he was. I was with family, gentle, non-brawling family.
No,
not the kind you could. Oh, all right. Mostly non-brawling. We're not counting my wife.
All right.
Okay. Because she's going to have to bail me out. She can't be in the fight, right? We can't both go to jail.
Oh.
So yeah,
were you in some sort of Michigan section?
I was in a Michigan section. Yeah, and we had
you could take them.
It was after we scored on a run that was on 3rd and 20, a gimme run, a give up run.
I think due to that, you could have taken them. That That is so physically debilitating that it sapped the strength of every Michigan person there. They all went, they all had a little minus 10 appear over their heads.
I would have destroyed this dude. However, I would have been destroyed by security instantly afterwards. So again, no one wins a fight where there's more than two people around, okay? It's just not possible. So yeah, Florida football's back, baby. But that's not what made me think of it. What made me, the one thing I wanted to mention from this game, aside from what, is the first thing Jim Harbaugh saw after his like second worst. Is this his second worst loss of the year? I don't know. It's the one that followed a massive.
He's got a list.
He does. It's the one that followed a massive embarrassing misstep against Ohio State, right? Where one program could clearly not be further from the other, right? In terms of overall quality or execution. It came after that. So the person least prepared in the world to see this saw it. It was Jim Harbaugh striding across the field at the 50 to go shake Dan Mullen's hand. Not going to be a real long handshake anyway, okay? Jim was getting the hell out of that situation. The first thing he saw were three Florida players doing the Choppa style dance.
At
like
him.
A phalanx in front of Dan Mullen.
Not in his path, at him.
Oh, at no! Him. Ghost Riders! They're here!
Mind you, Jim Harbaugh does not know what this is, okay? Guaranteed.
No.
He's not kept up with the Saints this season.
You don't do that at sleepovers?
It's true. I don't go to Harbaugh sleepovers. I'm certainly not going to get invited to one now. He's going to be like, you're that kid who gator chomped the kid. And I'm like, yeah.
And I'll do it again.
I'll do it again if you lose that badly.
Harbaugh is at the post-game presser like, oh, I thought it was a little disappointing of Coach to send those kangaroos after me.
They weren't wearing their helmets, first of all, which they have them. That's irresponsible. It's not good motorcycle etiquette.
They were riding forward like Dan Mullen's advanced scouts, right? Like,
yeah.
Oh boy.
We're going to ride in the tundra looking for prey. Here comes the Harbaugh.
In the house that young Jock built, no way.
Just motorbiking on out in front of Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen kind of pushes him aside, and after that, Harbaugh did. To be fair, what was the shortest handshake I've ever seen? More of a hand tap.
Yeah, if it were. A tummy rub.
Yeah, but that's all I'm
so
giving you after that. Like
that was the custom.
If you rub each other.
Hey, drink more milk.
Isn't that a thing?
Hey, take care of your flora.
Hey, coaches who listen to this, we know you're out there, and we're not going to name you, but try a little tummy rub. get some just companionship and some tum-tum loving.
Yeah. Skin-to-skin contact. It's important.
Did this game establish the protocol that like the losing coach has to be the issuer of it? If you win, you deserve a tummy
yes,
rub.
Yes, you get a tummy rub. Like
no,
you
no, I
good
think
job.
The losing coach gets a tummy rub to be like, hey, buck up.
It's going to be okay. Buddy?
I don't know. I think if you win, you deserve it. So coaches share a tummy rub, but there is like, they can each sense in their hands the meaning.
Oh, man, what if the state
this feels so condescending.
I mean, they're not doing anything. Let them do it.
There was a Twitter discussion last night over the utility of having quite so many state troopers forming a phalanx around coaches as they exit the field. Yeah, why not have them just tickle some tum-tums?
Mm-hmm.
That's all. That's all I have. Like, when you're like, what's your big takeaway from that game?
Tummy rubs.
I was like, I don't think you should get your team in a position where there's three of the opponent motorbiking and you're doing the Choppa style in your direction to face a coach who is the least prepared human to see this at that moment.
Yeah, that was absolutely the best case scenario of that outcome. We all got lucky.
That was, by the way, that was the leftovers I got to heat up the next day because I was at the game and could not see that. So just scrolling through Twitter this morning and happened upon it like, oh, it's all coming back now. I almost fought a guy who looked like the lead singer of My Morning Jacket because my team won a football game against an opponent who'd beat them in four exhibitions prior. I need to reevaluate things.
I think the important thing to remember here is that Jim Harbaugh is a huge disappointment, even though this is his third season with double-digit wins, which is as many as Michigan had in the, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 13 seasons before him. So.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan was basically Syracuse this year.
Lloyd Carr went 10-3, and those were good years, man. Jesus Christ. Oh, it's fun. It's fun how everybody's gone insane.
I did go into the victors immediately after the game because I'm a terrible, terrible human.
What's wrong with you? What are you? Oh, Jesus.
I'm the hitman who goes to the funeral, man.
Wait, did Godfrey at Brian? I didn't even look.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He had that shit drafted at halftime.
Yeah. But I went into the victors board and I was shocked at the double-digit number of posters in the first couple of pages who openly wondered if Jim Harbaugh has CTE.
Jesus Christ.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I'm just when you acting go, as an analyst.
Yeah. I'm sorry that I care about science.
It's like doing the autopsy when you go, hey, I could have been one of 23 things that killed this man. And if I were a decent human being, I'd just let this go. But let's see the toxicology report.
Syphilis. It was the syphilis.
It was either that or the heroin, cocaine, amphetamine, sterno, drain cleaner, you know, stanazolol, and PCP in a system. Could have been any of these things, really.
Syphilis.
Yeah. Let's tell the relatives. That was me.
Brian, that's going in our ringtone bank along with Spencer saying chicken fingers and just saying puffs.
They go together so well. Mm-hmm.
In our eventual soundboard app.
If you use these three phrases together, you will unlock the hidden treasure of the shutdown fullcast, buried for millennia.
More chicken fingers.
More chicken fingers.
Fresh, though, man. Like, they've been down there for thousands of years.
They pop out. They're still so crispy.
They're buried in gold.
That's right. Bury me in gold and chicken fingers.
Big C-H-A.
Speaking of burials. R.I.P. Mark Richt. Coaching career.
Can I say something serious?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was weird that Mark Richt took the Miami job because, you know, he left Georgia on not the worst possible terms. You know, it was awkward, but there's no avoiding that. But he's always struck me as being the emotional opposite of guys like Bear Bryant who retire and immediately die because they're not on the sideline. You know, he's into so many other things. Like I was surprised that he took this Miami job because I figured he would be like off building orphanages in the Ukraine.
I think you're misreading why he took it though. No, like, I mean, I don't think it was like
a value judgment.
No, I get that. I don't think it was like, oh, I have to coach, and if I don't coach, I don't know what to do with my hands. I think it was more like, hey, somebody loves me and appreciates me, and I want, like, that feels good. That feels validated. Like,
I agree.
I think it was more about, like, the emotional side of it, and that went away quick, didn't it?
Yeah, like, I agree, but this is all by way of saying, I feel less bad for Mark Richt than maybe any other coach out of a job in recent memory for the one fact that he has so many other interests. Like, he'll be fine. Like, I am not worried about Mark Richt at all because more than any other coach maybe I've ever been around, he seems set up to live a normal human life after football. Anyway, that's all. I don't know where that came from, and I don't know why I chose to air that on this podcast of all places, but I think Mark Richt's going to be just fine.
No, a legitimately good human. Like, also, I really can't definitively say that about a whole lot of people in college sports either because, you know, hey, I don't know everything or don't have it. No, like, legitimately good person.
I think another good outcome of this for him is that he didn't have to fire his son.
Which was kind of the line
in the sand. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's another contrast when we're talking about him as a actual empathetic, likable person. We can remember some other college football coaches who would not have made that decision.
Gosh, because reason that they're back in the news surrounding this hire?
So John Richt, the son of Mark Richt, was a quarterback's coach. If you watch Miami play at all this year, the quarterbacks were bad.
they're bad. It was underwhelming. If you wanted to be really nice about it, you could say underwhelming. They were bad.
How are you supposed to recruit quarterback talent to Miami?
And you know,
where are you supposed to find skilled football players in and around South Florida?
Which one is it nearsighted or farsighted where things up close are blurry?
Oh,
that's farsighted.
Okay.
Yeah. So did not fire John Rick. That was going to be one of the staff changes. He initially accepted this and then decided not to, which I don't know if your long play is, man, I've already got a ton of money. I'm not a super materialistic dude.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not going to fire my son, right? I'm just going to let it go. By the way, we say like not super materialistic. Mark Richt has more money than you'll ever earn.
Yeah, it's easy already to be not super materialistic when you're going to have that word money for.
Hold on. Yeah. Hold on. The full cast is about to take off any day now, sir. Any day. It's going to be our sole source of income.
We're like a cycle of locusts. You're like, give it 11 years. Sucker's going to be all over the place.
Locust does describe the audio quality of this podcast pretty accurately.
It's true. Underground and then buzzing without any explanation.
Sometimes literally, right?
So you do that, right?
Welcome to the plagues of Egypt.
That's our new podcast and it's going to be awesome.
It's Frog Week.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. Cheese It Bowl 2. Let's go. So there's that. And then there are other coaches. I don't know, locally, like, you go, well, man, who should Miami hire? I don't know. You know who's up the road? You're saying, oh, man, Butch Davis at FIU already has, probably still has his key, probably still works in the office, right? No, not Butch, man. You've already been that. You can't go back to Babylon, man.
Ken Dorsey.
No. I was thinking little man coaching at FAU named Lane Kiffin, because you know what? If you ask him to fire a family member, Lane's going to get out the pistol.
No, we said fire. Yeah, I heard you.
Yeah, no.
Lane will load him in the cannon, point it at the moon, and pull the cord.
Recall, who was Lane Kiffin's defensive coordinator who came under fire at USC for some underperforming defenses? His father.
His mom.
His sweet papa.
Yeah, his mom. That'd be great if you just look up and you're like, what's Ma Kiffin doing? Man, listen, you got to see her draw up his own fires.
Coaching these boys up is what she's doing.
Listen. Yeah. Listen, Mom, our linebackers look like shit. What the fuck?
Mom, you're fired, dumbass. I did not anticipate this part of this discussion, and I am delighting in it. As Lane Kiffin as the pizza rolls kid in everything he does.
Mom, we only have purple stuff. I ordered Sunny D. You're fucking fired.
And this is the worst coach meeting ever. All my friends can see me. Mom, Nick Saban is here. I'll be the disgrace of college sports.
Can you imagine that, Mom? That would be your fault, not mine, this time.
So, when it comes time to fire a relative, Mark Richt goes...
You know the man for the job.
Mark Richt's like, man, you know what? I'm just gonna walk away and probably go take a tour of some interesting but not too exotic country. Like, Mark Richt is going to go... travel to like
Costa Rica, man.
Yeah, that's, I'm gonna do mission work in a place that's just needs a little bit of stuff, not a whole lot. Do you know what Don Shula did when he retired and what an absolute madman he is? Now think of this. Don Shula coaches football for 50 years. 50 years of just football. No other interest, no other nothing. You know what's in his head.
Also should have kept his sons out of coaching, but here we are.
It probably, but you know what he was doing instead of that? Don Shula retired and he said, you know where I'm going to go for like 6 months? India.
Whew.
Yeah, Don Shula's wild.
Please tell me he didn't try to open one of his steakhouses there. That would not go well.
He probably did. What do you think he knew about India when he got there?
And imagine how
he's a football coach. He didn't know shit. Yeah. You guys like steak? Whoa. Whoa. Whoa.
Oh, boy.
Dude, we got some learning to do. Don Shula went through a journey, man. Mark Richt, Holly's right. He's going to Belize. Might go to Honduras for a couple of weeks. Yeah, back to Belize. Just keep this family, keep this easy, right? So, but if
go
you need
down to minister to Australia,
let's keep this real, like PCB.
Yeah,
they could use him.
They really could.
Yeah, gosh, he'll be clearing out his office. He'll get home, spend the holidays with the fam, and he'll be like ready and raring to go just in time for the spring break crowds to start hot coleslaw wrestling.
I do like the idea of all-time spring break chaperone, Mark Richt.
Yeah.
The darker way to look at this is to say that Mark Richt waited and waited and waited and waited until Manny Diaz took another job. Then was like, ha-ha, I'm out! Fuck you! You can't have it!
Honestly, guess if you gotta did promote that, John Richt. Hysterical.
You really want this job, don't you? Well, I'm gonna keep it for another year. 10 minutes later. So I'm out. And
man, how mad are you if you could have lived in Miami and you have to go live in Philly?
If I was Manny Diaz, I would have left an open jug of milk under his desk.
When but I said yeah, that would be hilarious, by the way, I meant for the university, not for Manny Diaz, for whom, you know, as bad as you can feel for a millionaire, you know, he's had some shitty luck in his stops before and some successes and failures, but man, he could pull a Todd Graham on this and I wouldn't even blink.
Listen, think about the call that the Temple AD had to make today to be like, so you're still good, right, Manny? Right?
Hey, buddy.
You're still happy, right? Yeah. Yeah.
We're still going to prom, right?
Is this like as cold as it gets or like in February? Oh, it gets cold, huh?
Interesting. Well,
that's cool. That's fun.
So how about those Eagles, huh?
Like Alshon Jeffrey punched me in the face with do it. Love those guys.
Fletcher Cox still going. Love him.
We have fun here.
But if you need Lane Kiffin to absolutely shoot a family member, he'll do it.
And once again, by the way, for those of you who don't believe in fun on your Twitter, Lane Kiffin's favorite booster is already back in action agitating for him to get this job. I'm referring, of course, to Uncle Luke.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, you didn't
Yes.
No, I didn't.
He's already back at it, man. He had it locked.
Who's he want? He wants Lane Kiffin as head coach, wants him to bring Jalen Hurts and install Ed Reed as defensive backs coach.
They didn't even have FAU didn't even have that good a year.
Also, Ed Reed follows up with a tweet, coaching Miami? Yes, I will.
I love
it's done, man. Sorted. That's lunch. It's done. This was easy.
Uncle Oh my God, the Luther Campbell coaching search firm.
Why don't we ask Gloria Stefan who she wants as coach? I mean, she went.
Wouldn't say Dana Hologram.
It's time for Miami to come out of the dark.
Yeah. I want a coach who'd do anything for this university.
Listen, I want to go up tempo because the rhythm is going to get you.
Do you know how much I would laugh if they hired a hurry-up guy and started playing that during offensive possessions? I would murk out so hard for Miami if they did that. They won't because they've done everything wrong for like 20 years.
Aww.
I know. So sad. So
it's
that
only
means,
like 18 years running.
Yeah. I do love that their guys are just like, They're ready, man. Like the football players, like Ed Reed hasn't been a defensive coordinator in college, and he's like, "I'll do it tomorrow." How will you learn? I'll just get it, man. And I mean, that may be the wrong example because I'm like Ed Reed could probably figure that shit out.
You've had the success that Ed Reed has had. When have you had a time in your life when you would have had to unlearn that self-confidence?
The problem is that extends to all Miami players. So that's when you get Ray Lewis being like, "I'm here."
Shockey coaching tight ends.
Hey, I'm Jeremy Shockey. I'm running training table. It's gonna be fine.
Gonna teach you kids how to steal boats.
We're eating the boats.
6 McChickens. That's lunch. Dollar menu. $6.
It's got lettuce on it, so it's a complete meal.
Yeah, lettuce promotes the circulation of what? Something.
Cocaine. Stuff.
Oh my God, Jeremy Shockey teaching human anatomy.
All right, so you got your hog first and foremost.
We were putting together a post on this with head coach The Rock, of course.
Yeah.
Goes without saying. You know, running backs coach Frank Gore, so on and so forth. I think my favorite one is special teams coach Devin Hester.
Sure.
Because you'd think like, okay, return specialist, return coordinator. No. I want Devin Hester, you know, making the punter do it over again. Punt me something I can't run back. Mm-hmm. Devin Hester just making punters cry all practice long.
Coffin That's actually that not shit. A bad idea.
You'd be the most resilient punter alive.
Mm-hmm. Ice proof.
I die in practice every day. What can a game do to me?
Your timeout means nothing to me.
Miami.
Ice a punter and you look over after the TV timeout and he's literally foaming at the mouth. But like from enthusiasm.
The other rumor that I've seen with this is
I'm gonna do it
because it's from a long time reporter at the Herald.
Jesus. Who's
obviously got a call from Rex Ryan.
This is the dumbest idea.
It is always real dumb.
We're having such a good day.
And obviously this guy called this reporter, right? Rex Ryan called this reporter. He's like, I'm real interested in this job. You should say it. And he's like, yeah, Rex Ryan's definitely interested in this job, which led me to think about Rex and Rob Ryan and what they could do in Miami without ever getting a single bit of reportage on.
Just imagine the smell.
So many farts.
I would prefer not to.
So much farting and so many boat accidents. And that might boat be farts. It. That might be the first time an entire coaching staff dies in a boating accident, right?
One, two, three,
hit the causeway
farts.
At 80 miles an hour.
It's how they would have wanted to go.
Exactly. The fireball could be seen all the way from Isla Mirada.
Hell yeah, brother.
Yeah, what was it?
A big boat fart.
I love you, Rob. I love you, Rex. Boat farts.
Can you think of a better death for Rex and Rob Ryan than professing love for each other right before they hit the causeway at 80 miles an hour in a boat loaded with farts? I can't. Put that on the full cast tombstone. That's the quote.
It's all about the you.
It's all about the you, baby.